We stood on a hillside. There were 19 of us that day. The ruins of centuries-old cottages were all around us, and there were wild blackberries growing inside the remains of the cottages, poking through what once were windows. A haunting reminder that there is still life living in the shelter of those walls. Far below us, there was a beautiful modern home with all the conveniences of running water and central heating and wood floors, completely belonging and also at the same time starkly out of place. The stone walls that both seemed to have existed forever, but were also built each year by the great, 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 great ancestors of the O'Donohue family, that's how they pronounce their name, O'Donohue, surround us. Most of those walls are still in use, and as our group sloshed through the mud created by an overflowing natural spring nearby, we oohed and awed at cattle that somehow were just prettier in County Clare than the cows any of us could remember back home. Of course, our cows are very pretty too. The Irish people are no strangers to hard times. The Irish people also know the profound power of resilience. And as we stood on that hill, the wind quieted for a minute, and we were able to listen to the stories of that family and how once this little cottage village held over 100 of their family members, moving in and out of the space, sitting at communal fires. This was where they made their life, growing and tending. Until one day, the English came and forcibly removed them, took their homes, destroyed some of them, and then allowed a few back, but only if they acknowledged English ownership and agreed to work their very own farm, only to give most of it away to an English landlord. Hundreds of years later, the family has reclaimed their land, though it's different now. When land was given back to the Irish people, it wasn't given back exactly as it was taken. And so it's interesting to recognize that one family's land might surround just a square plot of another family's land. And then their family's land continues on after, and they build pathways between and share. We're standing there on the hillside listening to how these people honor their history with such deep reverence by protecting the stories, by telling them often, and maybe most profoundly by continuing to tend their livestock, grow their gardens, build more walls, strong enough, open enough to stand for another forever. It's interesting to me and also very moving to realize that if you see these stone cottages, they're all loose rock. They're all free for the taking. When they have to build something new, they do not ever take it from the ruins. They take stones from the earth and build from down and up. As I think about the nature of resilience and these times we're currently living in, it strikes me that often we think about resilience as synonymous with healing. But the truth is that we know we can't heal from something while the hurt is still happening. The cut can't heal, can't stop bleeding if we keep cutting it. In the midst of all that, we're still called to remain functional, think critically, stay aware, be open-hearted, protect what we can, all while we do the dishes, read the stories, sing the songs. It is not lost on me that our Black and brown siblings know this struggle more intimately than I could ever imagine. And the Wabanaki peoples of this state and the Indigenous peoples of this country know this kind of in-process resilience better than any. the hurt is still happening. And it is happening to all of us in different ways, in layers, in the field of relativity. None of us are done hurting, and all of us have to keep going. There is no doubt that the O'Donohue story, as so many Irish stories are, is a poignant and perfect example of lived in-process resilience. And you might say that they, in a lot of ways, are on the other side of the hurt. But I wonder, what did resilience look like while it was happening? For the mothers and fathers who still brought children into the world as some sort of Hail Mary hope, even under extreme hardship and oppression, was resilience the choice to still turn the soil, to clear the fields, to build the walls while hated, while stolen from, while told that they had no right to that which they belonged to so deeply? You are hearing the metaphor of our situation, right? Yeah. In my description to the surface, I wrote that I would share thoughts on what it means to practice resilience through trusting in the movement of things and the mystery of time passing, healing as it goes. I shared the John O'Donohue quote, "I would love to live like a river flows, carried by the surprise of its own unfolding." I stand by those words and I love that quote, but I'll admit that I did not intend for it to sound quite so passive. Like all we have to do is sit straight with holes in us or lay back and float on the river just waiting for it all to be over. I trust that you know, and I promise that is not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is a little bit closer to the lyrics of a song by Connie Lim. She wrote it in 2025 as a healing meditative song. She wrote it as a mantra for resilience. It's called a water hymn. Water be my teacher, water carry me, teach me transformation, take me to the sea. Tell me how you break through rock, flow around what tries to block. Water be my teacher, water carry me. It is worth a listen. And I'm going to have Theo play it through twice. Feel free to join in if you get it.
Water be my teacher, water carry me. Teach me transformation, take me to the sea. Tell me how you break through a flow around what tries to block. Water be my teacher, water carry me. Water be my teacher, water carry me. Teach me transformation, take me to the sea. Tell me how you break through rock, flow around what tries to block. Water be my teacher, water carry me.
Resilience is necessary for survival, but it's not the same as healing. It's a process and a way of being in the world that trusts in the power of persistence, hope, and as a vehicle of transformation, it turns us into what we are meant to be in order to meet the moment, adapt to the challenge, and withstand the pain as we go. It's an internal promise, a covenant, if you will, with yourself and your source, yourself and that which you call God, yourself and your people, to survive because you believe in a future thriving. Resilience, just like the river pushing through the mountain or the spaces between the rocks, creates pathways that can lead to healing even while the hurt goes on. Pathways that others can follow. Maybe we're following pathways laid for us right now. And sometimes those pathways are carved like a riverbed. Sometimes those pathways are simply open spaces we can squeeze through that allow the hard stuff to move through while leaving the core of us still intact. One thing I think I've learned from the Irish, from people of color, and from the Indigenous stories is that while resilience can be individual, even when it's one person's story and one person's trauma, in truth, resilience is almost always communal. We are buoyed and held by those we surround ourselves with, by those whose roots are tangled with ours, by those we feel responsible for and those who are responsible for us. The pathways we need are created by many. We stood on a hillside, 19 of us that day. The ruins of centuries-old stone cottages around us, wild blackberries growing and poking through what once were windows, a haunting reminder that there is still life living in the shelter of those walls. There was water running from an overflowing spring nearby, creating the mud we sloshed through, a holy spring, as all of them are. We were 19 people. And we were hundreds of people. From the past and casting into the future, we were part of something. Those who came before and those will come after, both. Those who saved us, those who are saving us now, and we are those people standing on a hill, persisting, hoping, transforming, in every way possible. May it be so. Amen.